Hey, everybody, welcome to the Film Pigs. This is our April 2022 edition. I am here with Film Pigs Steve Falk.
Oh, hi, hello.
And Film Pig Steve Skelton.
Greetings, programs.
You guys, it's an exciting time for the movies.
Boy, is it.
And for us film pigs. There's a lot of stuff going on out there in the theaters and on streaming that excites me. I want to start this particular episode by finding out what the other guys have seen. And I'm going to tell you what I've seen. And this segment is called, What Have You Seen Lately? Now I'm going to start with Steve Falk. Steve, I'm going to ask you what you've seen lately. And, you know, why don't we go through the last month or so? You know, if you have a lot of titles, maybe just give us the first half of the month and we'll circle back to you, you know, after the rest of us have gone with our first half of the month.
Listen, I'm all about opacity and transparency. We just did this and my computer crashed. And so it was only 5 minutes in, but so these guys don't have to pretend like I'm saying it for the first time. I saw The Worst Person in the World. It was all right. Moonfall sucked. Jackass Forever was great. I didn't worry about their dicks. Los Angeles plays itself. It's a good documentary.
You raced through all those that, like, I think you need to go back. We need to go back.
Why?
So what was the first one you saw? It was like a foreign language
film
or
something? The Worst Person in the World, Danish fucking rom-com, not as good as I wanted it to be. I saw Moonfall. The moon was falling because it was really full of aliens.
But it never really fell, did it?
Got real close, guys. I'm not gonna lie.
But you liked it, right? You thought it was great.
I had a good time. No, it was terrible. Jackass Forever. You know, they really glossed over how fucked up those guys got. Like, Johnny Knoxville was like, had to relearn how to fucking talk and shit.
Yeah, because, like, he's got more concussions than an entire NFL team.
Yeah, but they didn't want to bum anyone out. And Los Angeles played itself. It's a documentary on Canopy. It's very hypnotic. And it's about Los Angeles as a film location and about society.
And you don't care about the jackass guy's penises?
Not interested in the wieners. No.
But they seem messed up. They look like they were messing up their penises.
Their junk has to be super messed up.
I also thought, like, letting snakes and spiders bite them is fucking, that's like the craziest shit. Fuck the rest
that
of
was
that
also
stuff.
Like the only thing that was the only thing I didn't like was like about Jackass Forever was like, as at the point now where I was like, you know what, can you just leave the animals alone?
Yeah,
don't trick the animals into biting you or doing stuff, because that's not nice to the animals.
No,
it's true.
Just get each other in the nuts a lot more.
Yeah,
but they were always bad with the animal stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly. But this, I mean, this time around, I was kind of like, all right, let's, you know, let's leave the bear alone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Skelton, what was, you saw how many movies in the last month?
This month I've only seen a couple. So I'm going to start with Ambulance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The Michael Bay doing a kind of a self-parody of a Michael Bay movie. It's not very good. Jake Gyllenhaal is trying his level best to make it entertaining, and he's not quite getting there because it's just too much for one person.
Yeah,
to carry.
But also he's bad at it. Like, he, you know, he doesn't do these outbursts of crazy in a genuine way. It didn't feel organic. It just felt like,
yeah, no. It was when he was kind of being the more goof around, charmy guy. That's when he was fun.
Yeah.
When it like the second half of the movie when he goes super psycho, then it's like, but that by that point it's all off, way off the rails in terms of making any sense or being entertaining anyway.
Yeah.
So
yeah, tonal mess.
Yeah.
Like, and even it's like Garrett Dillahunt can't save it, is, and he's just driving around in a tiny car with a flatulent dog.
And also, yeah, it's called Ambulance. It takes a long time to get to the ambulance.
Really does. Yeah.
Yeah, there's not as much ambulancing as you think there would be in a movie called Ambulance.
Right. I mean, like, if Speed had been called Bus, Speed would have delivered on that title.
Right, there's a bus real early.
From the get-go.
And you're on the bus most of the time, except at the end when you're on a train. But this movie...
I mean, because they set up, I mean, the ambulance at the very beginning, and then it disappears for the rest of Act 1.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't... I saw that in the theater a few weeks ago, and I already don't remember most of it.
No, it was a Heat Light. It was like a we're going to rob a bank for some reason movie, and things go awry.
They never work out when people rob banks. Like, the plan never comes together.
I know. I mean, you think that's like, at this point, people would be like, hey, we're going to rob a bank. Like, nah, you know what? It never works out. Let's figure out some other crime.
Yeah. Or other gainful employ.
Yeah, or yeah, maybe we should just fill out some applications at the Costco.
Yeah, exactly. It'd probably generate more cash ultimately.
We'll get health care there right away. They have a pretty decent program.
Yeah, they do. And good, cheap gas. All right, I'll start with the first half of my month. I've seen a lot of movies this month. I feel like it's almost like back to normal for me. Close. At least for now. I saw Death on the Nile on HBO, the Kenneth Branagh, Agatha Christie.
Oh, right.
Movie that Armie Hammer, the cannibal guy, is in it. You know?
And yeah. Right, because that came out just before he was declared a cannibal.
It was actually, no, it was well after he was declared a cannibal.
Was it?
But also not too long after he came up against actual criminal allegations, which...
Oh, right.
That's okay, what he's hassling with right now. He's disappeared and he's in rehab or whatever. But in all the trailers, when it was coming out in the theaters, they really cut him mostly out. But he plays a huge part in the movie, so it's kind of hard to get around it.
Yeah, they
kind
of got stuck and didn't have the budget to, like, Christopher Plummer or somebody else in.
Well, and it was too big a part, and it is this ensemble thing where everybody's dancing around each other. You can't replace. I don't think you could. But the movie itself really isn't very good anyway. And he's creepy. And I don't know if it was knowing what I know now that made me watch him going, oh, he's creeping me out. Or if he was actually giving a creepy performance, because
like the movie?
I don't think I did.
Oh,
but I'm not sure. Okay. I didn't hate it. It's like,
but you're not sure. But you're not sure if it's like it was also like weighed because of Hammer's, issues.
Yeah, and what I know about him. I mean, it's kind of hard,
right,
not to. Anyway. It's pretty slight entertainment. It's worse than the last Branagh Agatha Christie movie. So if you saw that and didn't like it, I don't know why you would like this one. It's very meandery. I also saw Studio 666, which is the horror movie with the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, I couldn't get through that.
Yeah. I saw it and I made fun of the drummer's acting, and the next day I felt bad because it was.
You killed him?
I don't.
Oh God.
I don't think so. I feel bad about saying his acting was bad.
It was poor timing on your part.
It was bad timing. It was bad timing on my part.
Not a fun movie?
No. I mean, I think it might be fun if you really, really love the Foo Fighters.
Yeah.
I mean, you have to love two things. You have to love the Foo Fighters and you have to love low-budge horror movies. If you love both of those things, then yeah, it might be enjoyable.
And you're one.
But I think you have to love both.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't. I think one for two ain't gonna cover you there.
Gotcha. No.
I also saw the movie X.
Yeah, I saw that.
What'd you think of that?
I was underwhelmed.
I was too. I thought it was too front-loaded, too slow burn, didn't get to the slashings fast enough. And there wasn't enough like explicit sex to make the porno angle enticing, I guess.
This is my review as well.
And then finally, I guess the first half of my month also had the Sandra Bullock the Lost City.
Oh, Jesus movie Christ.
With Channing Tatum.
Dear God, why?
I don't know. I was just in the mood for something dumb and fun.
You wanted a Romancing the Stone vibes movie.
Yeah.
And that was the only one on deck.
There were no other Romancing the Stone movies.
You couldn't have seen Jungle Cruise?
I already saw that. And I didn't care for Jungle Cruise. But this one.
That was the Rock one, right?
This one wasn't that bad, though.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise wasn't no good.
Yeah, Jungle Cruise sucked. But this isn't that bad. It's actually, you know, cute enough. They have enough chemistry. There's enough action set pieces that are fun. You know, it's not Romancing the Stone. It doesn't have that novel feel. It feels like they're doing something that we've done before. But.
Like Romancing the Stone.
Yeah. But they're charming. They are very charming. And it is kind of fun. I mean, you know, on a lark. PG-13 adventure movie lark. Yeah. What about the second half of your month, Steve? Falk?
Oh, boy. I launched right into Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Ooh, how is that?
I liked it. I liked it. I didn't.
Yeah, I want to see that.
I thought it was a little long. But ultimately rewarding and very likable and energetic and fun. Not like, you know, I had a friend who said it's the best movie in 15 years, and I did not feel that way. Not even close, but I did enjoy it a lot. It's very original.
I totally agree with that assessment. I did like it a lot, but I also agree that it's very long. And if you take my mother-in-law to it, she'll leave before the last 20 minutes is up.
You know, somewhere in the multiverse, she gives you a hand job during the movie.
Ew.
What?
Gross, dude.
I tried to stop it as I was thinking it.
Yeah, you didn't. You got to try harder.
I'm sorry.
On those things.
I watched a kind of a horror movie. I guess it is. It's called The Night House with Rebecca Hall.
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
It was diverting enough. It was like, it made me wish I could see Invisible Man again.
I think you can.
Oh, the latest one.
The Lizzie Moss one, yeah.
That's good. I like that one.
I like that movie
Invisible quite Man. A lot. The Lake House, I mean, Night House was dumb. It doesn't hold any logic. It has no logic whatsoever. But she's tremendous in that kind of movie. Like, I love The Gift, that movie she did like 5 years ago with Bateman and. It was one of those.
Joel Edgerton?
Yeah, who also directed it weirdly. But I love that movie, and she's great at being like nervous walking around a house. She should just do that. I know she's a director now. She directed Passing, which is supposed to be good, but she's real good looking, nervous walking around. And then this weekend I had a 1-2 punch of the Batman and Ambulance.
The Batman is my second one for this month.
And they were both kind of turds, I thought. I don't know. The Batman was fine, whatever. I'm so tired of that shit. I'm done with it. And I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, that's.
And like, I wanted Robert Pattinson to. Like, he has a joy in his. That role kills joy. Performers like Christian Bale and I'll not say Ben Affleck, but there's a joyfulness in a lot of these actors, even like Clooney and Val Kilmer, the looniness maybe those old ones don't count. But Robert Pattinson, nothing special came out. It was just like he could have been anyone, I thought.
I did appreciate how he dialed back the Batman voice so it wasn't like vocal fry gravelly all the time.
I guess, but why does he have to?
Half the time he just was talking like a normal guy just in a weird costume.
You know, and like I thought Paul Dano, he just made every fucking predictable choice as the Riddler. It's just the voice and the laughter and crazy in moments and.
Like, I like the stylistic choice of making it like a 70s crime.
I did, yes.
You know, I thought that it looked great, but I couldn't figure out why, for the life of me, that movie needed to be 3 hours long.
It didn't. I needed, it, you know, it frankly just needed some good old action and long stretches of the sort of cop '70s cop mystery shit didn't make up for the lack of that, I thought.
Yeah, it didn't have good set pieces.
Yeah,
it was like
a good car chase with Colin Farrell, who I thought was really good, and all that crazy weird makeup. Because Colin Farrell is always a fun character actor.
I did not know that was
trapped in a leading man's body.
Colin Farrell.
Yeah, as Penguin.
Yeah.
Holy shit! All right.
Yeah.
Oh, that's fun. Well,
I like it a little
that
more.
Was fun.
I had no idea who that was. I was like, is Richard Kind? Oh, that's good.
Did you not know which one was Jared Leto in House of Gucci?
No, I didn't know that. I guess for some reason, over 3.5 hours, I couldn't pick up my phone to IMDb the shit, which is rare for me.
Because you were so bored, you were uninterested in knowing more.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that movie was basically a remake of Nolan's Seven with intellectual property and an extra hour of running time for Batman.
Yeah, but
an extra hour of running time for no good reason.
But Seven had a baked in like roller coaster thrill of the goofy murders based on the Seven Deadly Sins. That this did not have at all.
No, that's
yeah.
True.
It was like yeah. It was like in Batman. It was like the Riddler was kind of like a half Jigsaw, half Seven, but not quite as good as either of them.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it just didn't quite, yeah, it was like, yeah, I mean, ultimately for me, I mean, I didn't mind it so much. Like, if I'd seen it in the theater, I probably would not have liked it at all because of how long it is. Sitting on my couch, I was okay with it, but I got to the end of it and I was like, this felt like three back-to-back episodes of a Batman TV series, not a movie.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And which, if that had been the case, then you know, it was like a 10-episode, you know, prestige Batman HBO Max show. That would have worked better for me, I think, ultimately. Also, Batman stole Blade's car.
Yeah, why'd you do that? What a jerk. I also think if you removed Batman from that particular movie, you wouldn't notice. You'd still have a full narrative that wouldn't really change. That's the way I felt about that.
Yeah, well, but I think that's kind of like, you know, I think that's what they were going for, is they were trying to, you know, lean more into the Batman persona as the classic detective, but he didn't really do as enough detective stuff to really pull that off, I think.
Yeah, he was just kind of checking in from time to time.
Well, the one gimmick that I did like that I thought worked pretty well was, like, you know, when he'd be at, you know, he'd get led into the crime scene and all the cops would be like, why is this weirdo in the dumb outfit just staring at things? And he's got those contact lenses that he's just, like, recording everything to go look at the crime scene later in his stupid underground cave. But I thought that was kind of like, I thought that was kind of an interesting kind of like thought in terms of like, oh, this is why he acts this weird, mysterious way. It's not because he's weird and mysterious. It's just because he's recording something to look at later. He just has to stay still so he gets everything in the frame.
So it doesn't look like a Paul Greengrass movie.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, he doesn't want a Greengrass's crime scene.
Yeah, he could have just sent like a TaskRabbit person wearing those.
Oh, that'll be the next movie. That'll be Robin. Will be the task rabbit.
There you go.
I saw that as well. Now that I think about it, it was really long. I saw that in the theater too. I saw two Chris Pine movies, both VOD, one on Amazon.
Oh,
Prime.
I did see one of those.
I saw both The Contractor and All the Old Knives.
Oh, wait a minute. I have actually seen both of those in the last, well, month, was it month and a half, I guess, maybe.
Probably, because all the old
I forgot about both of them.
Weeks, yeah. What'd you think of them, Skeleton?
Which one? The Contractor was the one where he's doing the paramilitary stuff, right?
Yeah.
And then the Knives one is the one where
there's a terrorist attack on a plane and he's un unraveling the pieces 8 years later.
Oh yeah, who was the mole kind of thing with Tandy Newton?
Yeah, was it his estranged lover?
Yeah, Tandy like Newton. Contractor, I thought was okay. It was okay. It's kind of a fun kind of B kind of, you know, pseudo actiony kind of show, and you know, I thought he was fine in that. It was kind of like a this is the kind of movie, you know, Liam Neeson would have made 15 years ago. Was the contractor, and he's kind of filling in that role. And I thought that's fine. That was fun enough for like a, you know, was it Amazon? They're both Amazon, right?
All the old knives is, but I think the contract, I don't know where the contractor's streaming now.
It's on maybe one of the other services.
A video on demand. Cause it's playing.
Or was it on demand? Oh, that's right. Yeah. 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 I think that was on demand, but so I thought that was fine. The knives one, for me, it was like just more like nothing really happened in it. So it was like meant to be this kind of, I guess, more like character focused, you know, pot boiler that didn't really boil ever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It also had, I think, one of the most unintentionally funny moments I've seen in a long time. And Chris Pine and Tandy Newton are having like dinner together. And he's sort of interrogating her a little bit, but there's their flirtation from their past relationship and the tension and all that. And she's a vegan now, and he's over there eating his red meat, and he offers her a piece of bacon. And she says, "I'm vegan." He says, "Live a little." So she leans over and he feeds her a bacon, and it's supposed to be erotic, you know? You know, the, like when people feed each other strawberries or whatever, but it's a slice of bacon. And as Hillary and I were watching this, Hillary just said, "Bacon is not a sexy meat." And I totally agree. It's hysterical looking to watch Tandy Newton try to eat bacon erotically.
You should recreate that scene with jerky.
Yeah, exactly. I agree with you, Skelton, the contractor. I was actually surprised about the contractor because I thought it was just going to be sort of straight-to-video doldrums like anything Liam Neeson's put out in the last number of years. But I thought it was a pretty solid B action
film. Yeah, it's like 15-year-old Liam Neeson stuff.
Yeah,
it was a lot more fun and had more action in it.
Yeah, yeah. It was pretty good. I also saw in the theater the other night, I went with Hillary to see a movie while Colby and his friend went to see a different movie. Colby and his friend saw The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent starring Nick Cage. Mm-hmm. And I asked Colby what he thought of that. And he said, "Nah, it's all right." I still want to see it.
Oh, yeah. I'll definitely.
You're going to be disappointed, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I will see it, and I will be disappointed, and that'll be that.
That's how it's going to work out. But while he was seeing that, I saw The Northman, the new Robert Eggers.
Oh, with Skarsgård?
Oh.
Yeah, with how's Skarsgård that? And his washboard abs covered in much blood for 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Vikings.
Yeah, it's Vikings, it's revenge, it's super graphic and gory, it's got Bjork and Willem Dafoe and Ethan Hawke barking like dogs. It's got Nicole
Kidman. This sounds all right.
Nicole Kidman chewing scenery in a delightfully twisted monologue. It's very predictable, very silly, and I think wildly overrated by most of the internet, but that all said, it's still quite entertaining, really cool to look at. The visuals are great, the art direction's great, the sets and setting are cool, the action is pretty awesome. I mean, if you're in the mood for an ultra violent Viking movie,
when aren't I?
Yeah, this is your show to go to, I would say. You know, just don't expect it to be, I don't know. I always get confused when people love movies like Gladiator. Like, maybe if I've been told, "No, this is very silly, you should just walk into it knowing it's very silly," then I might have liked it more. And I feel like The Northman has got a silly element, you know, like Conan the Barbarian or whatever. But entertaining. I think you guys should see it.
Yeah, I think I want to. I think I want to. All of the press with Robert Eggers, he seems to take himself incredibly seriously, which is a turnoff for me.
But his movies do too. But if you get it like a Conan, too, and
then like Emilius, who also takes himself way too seriously, but Conan is hits a tone that's awesome,
but not in a funny way. He doesn't take himself seriously in a funny way. He takes himself seriously as like, Jesus, this guy would have been the most annoying person to grow up with. Oh, you got. You're all want to play baseball. I'm in the library researching ancient Icelandic drama. Okay, dude, we're gonna be at the bar. You go do your Shakespeare in the street in Union Square.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head for me. It's why like I didn't much care for The Witch and I didn't much care for The Lighthouse.
I love The Lighthouse, Frank.
But this entertained me, and I think it the self-serious of the seriousness of the other two is what kind of bored me ultimately. And The Lighthouse I thought was repetitive and ultimately didn't go anywhere. It was just like 2 hours of cabin fever, which is fine, but it wasn't enough to entertain me fully. But this was, and its self-seriousness kind of worked for me in the same way that the self-seriousness of, you know, older Viking movies works for me, in that I think it's kind of funny at times when it's so serious. Does that make sense? Yeah. Versus Lighthouse and The Witch, it didn't reach that level of absurdity.
I think you miswatched The Lighthouse, but that's kind of a mean thing to say. But I don't think it takes it's super goofy, I thought, and hilarious. But anyway. Maybe Defoe is I always find him funny, and I thought Pattinson, that's the Pattinson I want to see, not fucking.
Yeah, I was very entertained by the first 40 minutes of The Lighthouse, and then I was like,
and then there just weren't enough Viking swords.
Yeah, there weren't enough beheadings. Yeah. It was just two guys getting drunk and yelling at each other and farting and stuff. And after a while, I just got bored. As funny as farting is, it is, especially when Willem Dafoe farts. And the acting was good in the movie, but so why don't we wrap up that segment? I think we've talked about all the things we've seen lately, correct? And let's move on to our discussion of the episode. And I thought, because we're talking about these movies, The Northman and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, because they're so new. And I was thinking, because there's a lot of chatter in the papers and on the social medias about these indie movies like The Northman and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent opening and not doing well at the box office and getting themselves beaten by children's animated movies and intellectual property sequels. So these two movies came out and this past week, and the movie nerds were excited. I know I was excited about both of them because I'm a sucker for Viking movies, as we said, and a meta Nick Cage, you know, Nick Cage's being John Malkovich sounds great to me. So I was excited to see either or both of them. Family film The Bad Guys, animated family film from DreamWorks called The Bad Guys, opened at number one. It was his first week in release. And then second week in release, Fantastic Beasts. And third week, Sonic 2, both kicked the butts of these two new movies. And a lot of people, like Variety, had a whole, I guess you call it a think piece or an editorial or whatever, about the reason why The Northman is failing is because really it was too bloated a budget for an indie film, and that worked against it. While other people are blaming, well, there's IP and people are going to go to IP or family cartoons before they're going to go to R-rated stuff. Who's to blame? Why are they, or is it marketing? Is it bad marketing? Is it just the R-rated versus PG-rated thing? Like, what is it? So I thought I'd ask you guys, because I honestly don't know. I mean, it's sort of interesting, and this has been happening for the last number of months, and I'll bring up some more titles as we talk, and maybe we mentioned a few in our what have you seen lately thing, but I was just wondering like what you guys think about that. Do you think it's just a predictable outcome of these two movies going up against the bad guys, or do you think the marketing was bad? What do you think it was that, like, why aren't these movies doing better?
I mean, I think it's a little too easy. And, you know, when you want to write a think piece after on a Monday morning after something like this, to say that there's a, you know, this is now a thing, you know, that these movies failed because they weren't IP. Now, you can't argue that the movie industry in general is being all driven towards tentpole IP stuff, and you know, smaller films will have to find their place in the streaming world or really lower their budgets. But I think in both of these cases, you know, A, Nick Cage has made himself not a movie star in the last 10 years. I mean, I'm not saying it's his fault, but he sort of, you can see him on, you know, in 8 movies every weekend, straight to video. And I think that lessened a specialness. And sure, it sounded fun to see something like this, and it could have caught on, but I think Nick Cage lowered his stock too precipitously, paying off his debts from buying Sarcophagi and Islands. I think The Northman, for Focus to spend $90 million on a movie without any stars and about such a subject matter like this, like Macbeth in Viking times, I think that was just not a smart decision. I mean, I like the decision. I wish there were room for experimental $90 million movies at the box office that open on 3,800 screens, but not when they do 10 million on 3,800 screens. It's not going to happen. But I think that was there's nothing appealing about that cast to the general public. I don't think, or the wider public.
That's kind of a stretch. Like, it's kind of like a Last Duel kind of setup, where it's like, yeah, it might be kind of an interesting story, but it's also so distant and weird and bleak that, you know, it's unless it's like one of the, unless it just lightning strikes like it does once in a while for something like that, and for some reason the public decides, yes, we're all super interested in this weird thing right now. Unless that happens, you know, it's not. Yeah, you're gonna lose your shirt on a $90 million experimental Viking movie.
I mean, do you think if they opened it at a different time, like a more off time, it would have been better? Like early January, you know, I
mean,
or something?
Well, I mean, but it's hard. I mean, you can't really. It's hard to tell because, you know, I think there's also a certain amount of, you know, you can't really measure this, but it also feels like because of this pandemic fatigue, I think audiences are also probably seeking more comfort food in their movies than usual, I would say. And so that's, I think, why, like, the cartoons and the video game movies and, you know, a 3-hour long fucking Batman movie pull the numbers right now more so than they normally do as the tent poles.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fair. And I think, you know, the argument could be made that they should have tried to platform this, and roll it out slowly. But I think the writing, well, what I've heard is that just the response from audience was never going to be something. It was sort of polarizing. So it wasn't, they couldn't rely on word of mouth being that strong. Critical response has been pretty good, but, I don't think their cinema score was higher than a B, or whatever that means.
That's just the audience saying it was okay and not great.
Yeah. It wasn't like an A and everyone has to see, you know, like everything, everyone all at once. It's a movie you can really spend time with and build word of mouth and build momentum.
Right. Well, they could have done that with this. It's actually interesting as to why they made one decision or the other. You guys were talking about Ambulance before and how you didn't like it. I do think it's interesting. I mean, this is It opened against Sonic 2. Sonic 2 came out the same weekend, and Sonic 2 was number one at the box office, but also Ambulance came in behind The Lost City and Morbius, which were both like in second, fourth or fifth weeks of their runs. But this is like, you know, it's a Michael Bay movie, and back in the 90s, you know, that would matter. It would, you know, there's The Rock and Bad Boys and all that stuff. I mean, Steve, you were mentioning the Northman's cast not being the draw that it should have been for a $90 million movie. Do you think that's sort of the deal with Ambulance as well? Because Gyllenhaal's not Will Smith or Sean Connery?
A little bit, but I also think that action movies like this, sort of straight-ahead action movies, macho action movies, have become the sort of the main offerings of Netflix in that over $100 million range. That's what they do. They do these Mark Wahlberg, Chris Blank, you know, big action, you know, movies. They're coming out like constantly now, and so this felt like there's. I think the audience looked at it and goes, "What's the fuck's the difference between this and whatever the Marky Mark one that came out recently was?"
Like, yeah, because it used to be like Michael Bay used to be like appointment action director.
Yeah,
like, and now he's just like everyone. Every other streaming actioner is aping his style anyway. So, and the movies are every bit as mediocre as Bay's movies. Yeah. So what's the difference?
I also think that the trailer was deeply underwhelming, and you know, while what's his name and Isa Gonzalez are both up and coming and getting a lot of notice around town and getting cast and everything, no, the audience doesn't yet know them. So then the only lure was Jake Gyllenhaal, because Michael Bay is not a lure anymore, except for some vague name recognition. And it didn't look good enough for people to show up.
Yeah.
And as it turned out, it wasn't good enough for people to show up.
No.
Actuality.
That's an element of this that I always wonder, because there is an element of if a movie doesn't do well, maybe it sucks. And I always wonder how much that plays into it or at all, you know, because nobody's really seen it when it comes out. So it's not like a word of mouth thing opening weekend. But I wonder that.
Yeah, but Ambulance isn't like one of isn't like an Office Space. It isn't a movie that like bombed on release, and then it's not going to develop a huge cult following in the 20 years after its release.
No, I know that. And I just wonder. That's true. I just wonder in certain instances, because Falk was mentioning the trailer of this not really being very good, and I think you know a talented person could probably cut a good trailer out of anything, but maybe it was just not a very good movie and therefore the marketing didn't look good, and maybe it was the movie's fault in Ambulance's case.
Yeah, I think it was. I mean, this kind of movie is being done a lot better with the Fast and Furious franchise, and it doesn't have any hook. It's an ambulance.
Yeah.
So, well, much later. Like later.
Being chased. Okay. I mean, why? and who cares? Like, the built-in stakes of trying to rescue this anonymous cop who we don't fucking care about and don't know are so zero and so unimportant. And so
easily handled in a different way than they choose to handle it in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they give this perfunctory sort of like nod to how hard it is to be a veteran, right? So we should forgive his brothers, you know, going along with this plan because he needs to get his wife an operation, which is so
right.
It's so half-ass and hacky that there's just no point to the whole setup.
Well, yeah, and then you add that with a very, especially considering Bay's pedigree, very underwhelming action chase sequences.
I think that was the worst part.
And what do you got?
It,
yeah. And what do you got left after that? Nothing.
Nothing.
No.
Like, at least if you're going to have, like, the, you know, cloying, you know, and cliched plot, you know, Bay at least usually delivers, you know, some giant, crazy, insane set pieces that are the little roller coaster bits, but all Ambulance really has in it are some truly nauseating drone shots.
I think that was his whole thing. It was like, I'm going to employ these vertical shots and everyone's going to be so fucking excited by them.
Motion sickness.
I saw Crank 2. I'm fine.
Yeah. And they did it better in Crank 2.
I saw Bad Boys 2. I don't need to see it again. It is kind of a mess. You also mentioned before the movie Moonfall. And I wonder if this is also a case of just, it's a movie that looked like crap from the outside, but it opened against Jackass Forever.
Yeah, no, but I think something like a Moonfall is like the reason I think the last like 10 to 15 years of disaster movies, like big tentpole disaster movies, have pretty much across the board failed is because they abandoned what makes disaster movies fun in the first place. Like if you go back to like the 70s disaster movies, is the disaster actually fucking happens.
Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
And you got Moonfall, you got Geostorm, you got you got these movies that claim there's going to be a disaster and then there isn't. There's a bunch of, you know, collateral damage leading up to the titular disaster that never actually happens. And
well, that's why I like my Danish action movies, because yeah. that shit happens.
They pull the trigger on the disaster.
The tunnel fire happens. The fucking, what did I just watch? The oil rig disaster shit. That shit happens, man.
Because
what was it, the last, was it The Day After Tomorrow? That was like the last, I'm trying to remember, the last big, you know, studio tentpole disaster movie where the disaster actually happened.
2012.
Oh, right, 2012.
Which was the last Roland Emmerich movie. Well, no, I mean, I would say Greenland. It's Greenland.
Was that a big studio tentpole?
No, I guess it was an indie.
That was a little more. That was like an indie, almost an indie disaster movie.
Yeah, you're right. But it was the last one I saw where the disaster actually happened.
Right. No, but I was thinking, trying like the big studio, like we're doing another Independence
Day.
What
about the one where? What about The Rock, where that giant tower started collapsing?
It's Skyscraper, and then there was San Andreas. San Andreas with The Rock.
Yeah. Both.
The disaster happened in that shit.
Oh right, right, yeah.
It's not good, but the disaster happened.
Wondering if those made more money than the disaster movies where the disaster doesn't happen.
No.
I'm betting they did. Even if they weren't big hits, I bet they make more money.
Because it didn't cost as much?
Because the disaster actually happens in them.
Yeah. I don't know.
Because, I mean, like, I can't be the only one who feels cheated when I go see a movie called Geostorm and there's no fucking Geostorm.
No, I agree with you 100%. 100%. It's really.
I mean, I don't mean to get upset and curse.
No. It's upsetting.
It chaps my ass.
Another movie you mentioned before, I think Skeleton, was The Last Duel from last year, and I remember, you know, Ridley Scott, you know, being publicly angry about it bombing and saying it was because kids were on their phones or whatever.
No, it's because nobody wants to see that fucking movie. I mean, that's why it bombed. It's like, it's not, it's like, it's, you know, the story is actually pretty interesting, but in terms of kind of, you know, it was just like clearly it was a Ridley Scott, you know, pet project. Mm-hmm. And clearly he used his influence to, you know, get it paid for, but you know, I'm pretty confident that everybody that ended up deciding, well, we got to pay for it because we wanted to make another Alien movie someday or something, like Blade Runner 3, that none of them were like, oh, yeah, this one's really going to take off. Like, they were already probably writing it off when they greenlit it, because they knew it was just going to be like, you know, I'm sure it'll be well made and it'll look great, but no one's going to want to see it because it's hella depressing. And it's like, it's the absolute wrong time in history to put that movie out.
Yeah. Yeah. Read the decade, Ridley.
Well, there's also
But I will say, however, I did kind of enjoy Ben Affleck playing his character as like a medieval dude bro.
He was great. He was funny.
I thought he was actually pretty fun as a like a super shitty frat boy, medieval frat boy.
Totally. He was in another movie though. It was so weird. I thought I did find his performance amusing, but it was like in a different film. It was weird. But yeah, I mean, I also wondered about the Ben Affleck, Matt Damon thing. I mean, is that, do people want that anymore? Just like those guys in a movie?
I think it didn't, I don't think it wouldn't have mattered who was in those roles. That movie would have tanked no matter what.
All right. That's cool. All right. Well, that's interesting. Thank you for helping me get to the bottom of why movies that aren't IP are doing poorly at the box office. Thank you.
We solved it.
You solved it. Fixed it. Do you guys, before we go, do you guys want to play a game? I got a game. The name of the game is called What Did You Do? And here's how it works. I'm going to give you the name of one of the biggest box office bombs in cinematic history. Okay? And the reason why it bombed is because of something that you did. So you're going to confess to me how you made this movie bomb.
Wait, are we us or are we somehow connected?
You're you. So you did something at some point that made this movie bomb. There was something that you did. And it doesn't, you can, what matters is that your confession is genuine and truthful and detailed, and that I believe that you're sorry. And I will award you points according to this. All right?
All right.
Does anyone want to volunteer to go first?
I'll go first.
All right. Steve Falk. And I went through a number of lists, and these were the ones, these are the titles that kept coming back. And I was surprised that I didn't find like Ishtar or Waterworld in any of the biggest box office bomb lists currently. So the first movie, Steve Falk, it's a movie called Timeline. And it stars Paul Walker, who's traveling through time to fight in castle battles. Stephen Falk, Timeline tanked. It's one of the biggest box office bombs in history. What did you do?
Look, listen, I'm not proud of it, but when I was in college, I went to a bar. I had a fake ID, and I was bad at holding my liquor.
Oh no.
And I got in a conversation with this handsome guy, kind of blonde, like a little stubble. At Max Fish, and I was like, just, you know, garrulous. You know how I get garrulous when I had a few cocktails.
Yeah, you're.
And I was like, hey, I'm in acting school, and he was like, oh yeah, I'm an actor. I was like, yeah, whatever. What do you do? I'm doing Chekhov. What are you doing? And he told me the story of this script he had just signed on for, a medieval time jumping movie. And I laughed at him, and I told him it sounded like a piece of garbage, and he should get out now and go do real fucking theater, man. Like Sam Shepard, you should do True West. Me and you will do True West. And he was pretty loaded too, and he was like, "You're fucking right, dude. You're so fucking right." And what I heard years later is he called Universal. He said he wants out, and they said, "We won't let you. We already have a lot of money behind it." And he said, well, then I'm going to fucking be so bad in it. I'm going to tank the movie. And I'm going to shit talk it on every talk show. Or I'm not going to go do the circuit. Fuck you. Sue me. And so he fucking tanked the movie because I had made him feel ashamed for, that he was doing Timeline.
Are you regretful?
I feel terrible. That movie had so much promise. And I can't help but think, would he be alive today if I hadn't if I hadn't quartered him in Max Fish and told him that his entire life was a lie and all his choices were dog shit? Thank God he didn't tell me about Fast and Furious.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God. That was amazing and harrowing. I'm awarding you 1,111 points.
Thank you.
I thought you were going to say that you were the script doctor who wrote the Night Arrows line.
No, that's the best line. Night Arrows!
It was a Hail Mary to save the movie, but it didn't work for Night Arrow.
That's it?
So you have 1,111 points.
That's a lot of points.
That was a great confession. I really... It was really moving. I choked up a little. Skeleton, it's your turn.
Yes. Okay.
Your movie was a movie I was very excited to see, and wow. It's called Battlefield Earth.
Oh, Battlefield Earth.
And it stars someone named John Travolta. He's got mm-hmm. dreadlocks, and mm-hmm. It's sort of a Scientology space saga situation where Barry Pepper runs from, you know, Forrest Whitaker or whatever. Skeleton, this movie tanked so bad.
Yeah.
What did you do?
Oh, man. I mean, I don't like to talk about it.
Well, nobody does, but you have to. That's why we're here.
No, it's, so around the time, like, the movie was going into production, they actually had a really nice kind of a look for the film, a gorgeous color palette. It was going to be award winning cinematography, and I actually was in a meeting because I was temping at the studio at the time, and Travolta was there, and with his Scientology entourage, and the studio bigwigs were there. I was serving coffee, and they were going over the look of the film, and everyone was super excited. And at one point, you know, I gave Mr. Travolta his coffee, and he thanked me and said, "Hey, what do you think of the look of this film? Because it has a real kind of." Classic Star Wars color palette, but also, very kind of art house look to it. And it was really, really spectacular and unusual. And I looked at all the samples in the drawings and all the art. And I went, yeah, I mean, it's pretty good, but I don't know. I mean, I think this movie would look so much better if you just had random primary colors that just seems to just shift from like blue to red or green. And that was it. And you know, and you just do all just single colors. And you know, the room went silent. Mr. Travolta just thought about that for a minute and was like, yeah, you're onto something, kid. I was fired that day. They went with my idea, and
did you also tell them to keep the camera tilted the entire time?
No, but I gave them the number to a tripod rental company that was pretty shady.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sorry for what you've done?
I'm so sorry. I'm so regretful because it was a whole clown show, and you know, somehow, you know, I feel like to this day, I feel like no one takes that movie seriously because of me.
Yeah. You know, I believe you're sorry. I'm going to give you 972 points. The downfall here for you, I think, you know, it getting over 1,000 points on this is that you, like somebody else was involved. I mean, I think you're blaming yourself too much. Somebody told them to tilt the camera the whole time so everything looked like it was at an awkward angle, and you didn't do that.
So, yeah, I just gave the number to the guy who rented him the broken tripods.
Right. I'm just saying it's, you know, not 100% your fault, but I appreciate, you know, it's 970.
I really feel like it all hinged on me.
It probably did. Yeah. But okay. Well, that's good. Let's move on. Steve Falk, the next title is a movie called Stealth. It's a movie with Josh Lucas and Jamie Foxx, and they fly fancy military planes that can get gassed up in the air, and like these blimps with gas can gas up the jets.
Oh, gas blimps.
And it bombed. It's a really big bomb. Steve Falk, what did you do?
I guess I'm a little embarrassed that you're bringing this up.
I'm sorry. This is tough stuff.
All right. So listen, Rob Cohen and I became friends. Well, we didn't really become friends, but I used to temp at Disney, and he would come in because he was fucking one of the executives there, and also dealing coke in the office, and you know, we became anyway. Years later, his assistant quit, and he called me. It's like, look, Falk, I need help. Can you be my assistant? And I was like, God, man, no. I'm running a theater company. I'm temping, you know, at Disney Consumer Products in Burbank. I mean,
DC.
And he was DC, like, listen, just come on. He also was like, I need you to score me some coke. Cause he had a bad connect at the time, and I always have good connects. So I was like, all right, I will be your assistant just for this one movie. What's it about? He's like, don't worry about it. It's fucking airplanes, whatever. but he's like, most importantly, bring me the coke. Make sure you bring me all the coke. So I got him a pound of coke, and I brought it to the lot, and he immediately, he was in the middle of a production meeting on this movie, and he had me sit in, and he was like running to the bathroom and doing bumps, and he was, you know, prepping, and I read the script, and I started getting a feel for things, and this is pretty fucked up, but he just had me give him more and more coke, and then his heart stopped.
Oh,
just one day during a stunts meeting, and I was like, dude, and I fucking hit his chest a lot because I watched a lot of ER, and I got his heart going again, and he was like, I was like, I got to go tell the studio, I got to tell. He was like, no, you can't. I have to direct this movie. And I was like, you can't fucking stand, Rob. Look, your fucking lung just collapsed. And he was like, he grabbed me by the collar. He pulled me in and said, you have to direct it for me.
Oh,
I was like,
God.
What? I was like, he was like, have you ever seen Cyrano? I was like, no, I don't know what Cyrano is. He's like, you're going to wear your earpiece. I'm going to tell you what to do from my rehab facility. So I wore a body camera and the earpiece, and I directed the movie. Guys, I don't know how to direct. I don't know what I'm doing. Rob, the connection didn't work half of the time. He also had me work on the script because he was supposed to be doing a pass, but he was in fucking Florida at Silences, which is a really high price rehab facility. He had to get his life in order, but he couldn't lose this movie. He was getting paid $4 million to direct it. And so he paid me under the table to direct the movie, and I didn't know what I was doing at all. I just fucked everything up. I fucked everything up. I don't know. I haven't watched the movie to this day. I got kicked out of the editing room when he was recovered. He tried to fix it, but it just I ruined his career. I ruined Josh Lucas's career, Jessica Biel's career. I'm sorry. I did terrible things.
Wow. Still.
A pound of cocaine.
I mean, you sound genuinely sorry, and that's important. But I think, like, it's hard to get past what you did.
I know. I deserve it. I deserve it.
Because I mean, I had high hopes for Stealth. I'm going to give you 666 points. That's the mark of the beast.
Okay. I deserve it.
Which seems appropriate. which means you now have 1,777 points.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I mean, I guess, but you're terrible. Skeleton.
Yeah.
There was a movie called Hudson Hawk, and it starred Bruce Willis well before modern Bruce Willis. It was a pet project, I guess. Had Danny Aiello. It's about jewel thievery. It was a comedy, action comedy, I guess. Skeleton, it tanked so bad. Everybody wanted the best for this thing. Everybody was excited about it. It's Bruce Willis. What did you do?
This one really stings.
I hope so.
Because, wow, I mean, this was... Oh, this is way back. This is like, you know... I was just getting my start in the industry. I was a Danny Aiello's assistant.
Oh, my God.
Just absolute sweetheart of a man. It was, you know, I've nothing but a love for him and his memory. But what happened was, and I don't know exactly the circumstances that led to this, mm-hmm. but Danny came to me and he had his briefcase. It had his copy of the script. And he said, I'm going away for the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I need you to keep track of this script because it's the shooting script. And I don't know. He said this to me, and I, to this day, I don't know how or why. He said, and it's the only copy.
Oh, no.
There are no other copies of the script to Hudson Hawk.
Why wouldn't he have had multiple copies?
That's what I, you know, I that's why I asked him. I said, Mr. Aiello, is this really the only copy? I don't understand. He's like, look, just you need to take care of it.
It was a different. It was a different time before computers.
It was a different time. It was a. I don't know if they were just trying to, like, the security was so tight on the show for some reason that they, you know.
Or maybe they were trying to save paper.
Yeah, and I asked him. I said, "Hey, do you want me to maybe while you're you know on your weekend vacation, I could go to Kinko's and maybe make some copies." He's like, "No. It's on a special paper that you can't Xerox."
Mm.
So, he went off for his weekend, and I also was taking care of some friends' dogs. They were very big, rowdy dogs, and I had to go over there to feed them and, you know, let them out and such. And but I also didn't want to get the script, out of my hands. Yeah, they were like a bull mastiff Marmaduke kind of really just big and unwieldy. Uh-huh. And so I took the briefcase with the script in it with me, and. To this day, I'm still not sure what happened, because there was a phone call, and I answered it, and I had to take a message, so I put the briefcase down, and as I was taking the message, there was a ruckus, and I turned, and the dogs had torn open the briefcase.
Oh, Jesus.
And they had gotten into the script.
Oh, no.
The only copy of Hudson Hawk. And they tore it to shreds.
To shreds?
And it was covered in slobber, and the ink had run. And I gathered as much of it as I could and chased the dogs outside, admonishing them.
Mm-hmm.
I gathered the tattered remains of the script. And I tried desperately to paste it back together, to put it back into some sort of order, but it was impossible. You could maybe read 20% of the words on the remaining pages.
So what did you do?
I had to spend the rest of the weekend before Mr. Aiello got back typing up a new script for Hudson Hawk based on the remnants of the original script, the only copy that these giant dogs had destroyed and chewed up. And so I'm pretty sure that there weren't weird comic villains or show tunes in the original script.
Wow.
But that was all I could come up with, you know, on short notice before Mr. Aiello came back. And the hard part was finding the uncopyable paper to type it up on again. And I handed his briefcase back with the script I had to reconstruct, and I never told anyone.
Nobody seemed to notice. They just went ahead and shot the thing.
That was the part I thought was weird.
Well, I mean, like, they shot a whole sequence of The Wizard of Oz with a dead guy hanging in rafters in the background, so oversights happen.
It's Hollywood.
Things happen. Are you sorry?
I am so sorry. I mean, to this day, like, I sometimes will wake up in a cold sweat, as that memory floods back into my nightmares. I'm just sorry that the world was denied the real Hudson Hawk script.
I'm going to award you 2001 points because I feel like this is as bad as 9/11. What you did to Hudson Hawk is as bad as 9/11. So you now have 2,973 points. Steve Falk, I have one more title for you. This is your last one. And this is serious. Like, what you did is serious. The name of the movie is The Postman. And it stars Kevin Costner, who plays a drifter who has found a bag of mail. This movie has Tom Petty in it, in addition to Giovanni Ribisi. Huge bomb. Huge bomb. I mean, after Waterworld, they didn't think Costner could do this again, but he did it again, and he did it without water. What did you do?
Listen, I'm not gonna say The Postman was properly conceived. I am gonna say what should have been small role in it came from the heart and came from a really good place. My dad and I, growing up, we disagreed on everything. We bonded on one thing, and that was the music of Tom Petty. Mm-hmm. So years later, after my father had passed, I was trying to find a way to break into the industry, and I got a call from this temp agency, this Hollywood temp agency, and you know, I'd previously done little stints at various production houses and post houses and stuff, but they said that there was a shortage in the catering department on this big movie. And I was like, I don't know anything about cooking. And they're like, well, I was like, well, who's in it? And they're like, well, you know, Kevin Costner. I was like, pass. Tom Petty. And I was like, oh, wait, you're calling for Steven? Hold on. And I changed my voice. I was like, oh. And they're like, they explained the gig. I was like, yeah,
So different. You sound so different when you do that. Do that voice again. That's amazing.
I'm an excellent cook. Absolutely. This is right up my alley.
So different sounding.
I'm born for this. So needless to say, I got flown out to the stages. And, I didn't know it was in the fucking middle of nowhere. Fucking Utah and shit. And then I also thought, you know, okay, worst case scenario, I'd be bringing waters to, like, Video Village, and I could just corner Tom Petty one day and just tell him how much his music meant to me and my family. Well, they needed a line cook. I don't have to tell you, I don't know a single thing about cooking. So I was going to bail. Look, I'm a good guy. I was going to say, this has been a terrible mistake. I got to leave. And so I was going to find transpo to tell them they got to take me back to base and you know, I'd find a way to get home, and I heard this drawl, this southern drawl, and it's like, howdy. I turned around. It was Tom Petty. He was smoking a cigarette. And he was like, you want one? And I was like, yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, Mr. Petty. And he had a break. He didn't like to go to his trailer. He was a man of the people. He ended up talking to me for an hour and a half. It was fucking amazing. We bonded like this. I never had told you about this, but me and Tom Petty bonded. And I knew I couldn't quit. And I went back. I went back. And I said, what do you need? Chef. Yes, chef. And they're like, we're not chefs. What can you make? I was like, dude, whatever, breakfast. They're like, great. Make the hollandaise sauce.
Oh, my God.
I don't know what hollandaise sauce is.
I don't even know what's in a hollandaise sauce. Well, it's just yellow. Well,
it turns out raw eggs.
Oh, raw eggs. That's dangerous, isn't it?
Well, I didn't know that. So I whipped up a giant batch of raw egg sauce.
But it was just raw.
Random things that I put. I guessed. I put cream. I put paprika because I remember paprika being on a Benedict.
Paprika. What?
I don't know. I added some Worcestershire sauce.
Oh no.
Yeah, I added Tabasco because I thought a little kick would help. I put fish sauce in it.
Jesus.
And then I put more raw eggs. I took some. It was a little runny, so I took some grease from the grease thing that they kept in the freezer. Added some grease up in there.
Did you kill Tom Petty?
Tom Petty? Listen. It was. They were in nights. Jesus. And everyone was famished by the morning. And people were fucking wolfing down this hollandaise sauce. The most important – this was the second day of shooting. Going into day three, the entire cast and crew had diarrhea. Massive, massive.
Well, yeah.
I was so scared. You know what? The one guy who didn't get it, aside from me – Mr. Tom Petty, he didn't like hollandaise sauce.
So he didn't have any.
No, so I got to smoke cigarettes with him, but he said to me, I'll never forget this. I thought we had bonded. I had not harmed him, at least. I didn't care Kevin Costner shitting his brains out. He turns to me, and the whole cast and crew is blue, but they don't have the insurance to stop down, because after Waterworld, couldn't insure Kevin Costner anymore. And he just said, look, I love music, but all I wanted to do was be a movie star, and I don't think this one's going to do it for me. And he cried.
Oh,
and
Jesus.
I've never felt so small and low in my entire life. I'm so sorry.
So you food poisoned everybody on the Postman except for Tom Petty, but then you made Tom Petty cry.
And I killed his
dreams. That's awful. You're awful. What a horrible person.
I'm so sorry.
I'm going to award you 2,333 points.
I don't deserve anything. I don't deserve any points.
Although, I mean, you know, like, I mean, Hollywood crews are famous for their love of hollandaise sauce.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that. I wasn't in Hollywood. I wasn't part of the machine yet.
So you have somewhere around 5,000 points. That was awful. That was terrible. Skeleton, your last title is a movie called Soldier. It stars a guy named Kurt Russell. He plays a soldier named Todd. He's lost in space on some kind of trash junk planet.
Yeah. Yeah, this one is a weird one because they, you know, because originally... Like, it was conceived as the movie taking place in the same universe as Blade Runner.
Mm-hmm.
That was the original concept, and they couldn't get, I think, studio permission to do some specific stuff. But, so, before they actually, you know, got the heave-ho from the studio on the Blade Runner crossover. I was working as a PA on that project, and I actually got to spend some time with Kurt Russell,
Oh.
And who's a terrific guy. and just absolute consummate professional, you know, classic movie star. And, you know, he was working with the script and he was working with the character and trying to figure out, you know, where to approach the role. And, you know, he was kind of trying to figure out how to get into character. And so I said, "Hey, Kurt, this is, you know, you're a soldier. You're like a superhuman soldier.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got your emotions smashed deep down.
And a great name. He's got a great job. Name.
Yeah.
Great
and name. That's what I was like, your character name is Todd. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic. Mm-hmm. It's like so perfect. I think this movie is going to be so big that there's going to be a series of sequels, an endless series of sequels, probably at least 9 movies.
Soldier 2, Soldier 3, Soldier 4,
three,
Soldier
4,
5,
yeah. And
Soldier 6.
Return of Soldier.
And then Soldier 7 would just be called Soldier.
Yeah. And so I really think, you know, to get into this character, to really make it part of you, you've got to take on that persona of Todd. You've got to make it real. And what you should get that name tattooed right on your face, like for real, like a real tattoo. Don't like the makeup department, you know, yeah, that's bullshit. Cause then you wipe it off at the end of the day and you're not Todd. You know, you want to go the distance on this thing, and get that face tattoo. And he got it.
He got it.
It's actually a face tattoo. And
wait,
and
Kurt Russell got a real tattoo.
Yeah, it says to this day it's still there, but they have to CG it out now in everything he's done ever since Soldier. And
it's like Zoe Kravitz's arms.
Yeah. And it was, you know, the movie just bombed. and the worst part was, like, the week after the movie opened, when it just fucking tanked. I was in the valley, and I passed him on the street, and he was walking out on the street and with the Todd tattoo on his face.
Uh-huh.
And I just pretended I didn't know who he was.
You just walked on. You just walked on.
I couldn't face him.
That is low. You're a coward.
That's fucked up.
I know. It's the worst. It's the lowest point of my life, I think.
You should be ashamed of yourself. I am
so ashamed
of
myself.
I'm not even kidding. Soldier should have been a giant box office hit. All the elements for a hit are there.
Everything was there.
Kurt Russell on a junk planet, Mad Maxian vibes. I don't know.
What else do you need?
I don't know. What horrible. I'm going to award you 2,137 points. And if I understand my
math...
Okay,
can you tell me... Okay, can you please tell me exactly to the point, exactly how many points I have?
You have 5,110 points is your final score. But, Falk, I'm looking at the numbers here, and your final score is 5,110 points as well.
Wow, that's amazing.
So, the easiest thing to do is a real quick tiebreaker. Which one of you wants to take responsibility for the adventures of Pluto Nash?
I'm happy with a tie. I'm happy with a tie.
Yeah, I think I'm good with a tie.
No.
It's 10 o'clock.
You don't want to take responsibility?
No.
You're just...
Not at all.
All right. Fine. Where's your competitive spirit? Good God. All right.
Is a zero sum game.
Yeah, Mickey has admit all these horrible things we've done. It's humbled us.
Yeah, I want to be better.
There are no winners in this game of losers. That's
exactly right.
I was actually moved by your stories. I thought they were very good. But let's wrap up the show. Thanks everybody for listening. We've had a tie in Loserdom tonight, and I think that's great. And we learned a lot about what makes box office failures and successes, and also we learned how to love and how to forgive, right?
Yeah, and
it really was like a really well-rounded episode.
I thought so, too. And we learned that Todd can multiply four digits.
He's like a human calculator.
Yeah. Real genius. You should have been counting cards in Vegas.
The marble is gonna break your legs.
Thanks to both the Steve Falk,
me,
and Steve Skelton.
Ooh.
And thanks to me, Todd Anderson. Ooh. And thanks as always to Adam Blau, who made us our musics. And we'll see you next time on the film page.
Bye, everybody.